Welcome to Bar Fights with attorney and advocate Sarah Klein, taking on issues that matter and advocating for legal, cultural, and political change everywhere in order to protect children and vulnerable adults. Joining the conversation are survivors, advocates, lawyers, media personalities, athletes, celebrities, authors, wellness aficionados, and many more. Because bringing real justice takes a team of experts who care. Now, leading the fight is your host, Sarah Klein.
Hey, you guys, welcome back to Bar Fights. Happy Monday. There's so much to unpack today, but I'm going to start with this. As you guys can imagine, I am asked to support so many organizations, and it literally happens all the time. And there's so many great people doing so much great work that it becomes tricky for me to pick and choose. Where am I going to put my energy, my time, my resources, and how can I actually affect change in the best way possible? And so I got to be picky where I'm going to put sort of my name, my story. And last year, something really awesome happened. And I still tell people it was one of my favorite days I ever had. And one of my best friends, Haley, she listens to Bar Fights religiously, and she came with me throughout that day from morning through night. And she's been my friend for 25 years. And she witnessed what happened last June. And she said, "Sarah, I've never seen you glowing like that. I've never seen you so excited like that." And the reason was I was honored at this event. It was called the Day One Gala, and it was in New York City, and they gave me their Voice of Courage Award. And it wasn't because they gave me an award that I was so excited. It was more than that. It was because I was in this beautiful venue, completely packed full of incredible people. And I was on stage sharing some of the most vulnerable things I've ever really said aloud in front of hundreds or thousands of people. I don't even know. It felt like millions, but it was probably like thousands. And I felt so seen, so understood. And the very purpose of this room, it wasn't even a room. It was like, it's an enormous venue, being so packed, was because people really cared about these issues, what I had to say about my story, about the issues surrounding, you know, youth, dating violence, abuse, all of the things that we talk about on this show. And my heart was so full, was so touched. I think I even got like a standing ovation, and I was so choked up and full. And it gave me such hope that people are willing to have these conversations. People are willing to honor someone who has a story to tell that is not the prettiest story. It is not, you know, that magical movie moment where there's happily ever after, right? Like, it's a story of hope, but it's also a tough one. It's gritty. It's real. And that night in June in New York City of last year is when I really fell in love with this organization. This organization is called Day One, and they're a nonprofit in New York City, and they provide incredible services to our youth age 24 and under. Their mission is to partner with youth to end dating abuse, domestic violence, through community education, services, legal advocacy, which is so important, and leadership development. And we're going to dive into all of those things that Day One does today. But here's something cool, you guys. So it wasn't just a one and done. This organization asked me back for this summer to host their committee, be the committee chair for their Voices Against Violence Gala, which again is happening this June 13th in New York City, 2024. We're going to dive into that later. So this is a partnership I'm really, really proud of, and something that I felt so important that I wanted to bring it to you guys, bring it to the show. And I am super honored to have two of the greatest from day one here today. I'll start with Ann Patterson, who's new to day one, and we're going to hear about that. She joined the team at day one in March of this year. She was named their executive director. I know she has big shoes to fill because the former executive director was there for over 2 decades. And then I am also joined by lovely Laura Duques. She's a lawyer, a community leader. Her resume is too fancy for me to even rattle off here, but she's a big time, big firm New York City lawyer. And she's been a member of the board of directors at Day One for 8 years. For 3 of those years, she was vice chair. She's now the chair of Day One. So, Laura and Anne, welcome to Bar Fights.
Thank you.
You.
You ladies are incredible. I want to start with this. I want to start with why is there a need for an organization like Day One? This is a huge question, and it's going to take us, I mean, we could talk about this for hours, but why is there a need for Day One? What does Day One do? Why do we need it? What services do you provide? And why did each of you individually decide that this was something you wanted to put either, your career behind in Anne's case, or your time, energy, hours, maybe sanity sometimes behind in Laura's case? So that's like 20 million questions that could take us the rest of the show. I'll just kick it to you guys, but why do we need something like this, and what do you do, and why are we here?
Who should go
Well,
first? I feel
who should go
like
first
I
indeed?
know. I feel like with in this world, we care about consent and agency. So Laura and I even negotiated who speaks first. Laura, you I don't know, you have a longer history with the organization.
I do. But I will start then. I will jump in. Let me just say first, Sarah, hearing you say that our honoring you was one of the best days of your life, gave me goosebumps and actually brought tears to my eyes. It was so incredible for us to have you there and to honor you, to hear your story, and for you to be a partner with us. I think it's one of our best days. So just to start there, it doesn't get much better than
I'm literally choking up now because it really, as a survivor, and this is the work that you're doing in the trenches, but as a survivor to feel, seen, accepted, like anyone cares, hurt, it just, to me, it was such a pivot. So I'm crying now. So we're 30 seconds
Here
in.
we all go.
I'm crying.
All right, but that brings up partially why day one, not why it's needed, sort of, but why am I there, and why are so many people coming to our events and listening to you and other survivors and valuing what has happened and what needs to happen. I came to day one following my own personal experience as a young person being a survivor of gender-based violence. And many years ago, when I was young, that was many, many years ago, over a period of 5 years, I was a victim of what today we would call stalking. But that didn't exist then. And that also meant there was no help available. There was no preventive education. There was no understanding of the dynamics of the experience. For me, there was no counseling that didn't include blame, and there was no legal support or recourse. So while my experience pales in comparison with what so many people experience. It was formative and it stayed with me for a long, long, long time. And so many years later, after having been a law student and a young lawyer involved in researching, writing about, and representing survivors of abuse, at some point I decided it was time for me to join a board. And I knew that I wanted to support an organization working to end gender-based violence. And then when I learned about Day One and saw that its mission is focused on young people, first of all, and that they not only provide support to survivors, but preventative education, I knew this is where I wanted to be. I mean, it was immediately clear that Day One is the organization I wish had been in existence when I needed it. And that today it is unfortunately still very much needed, providing life nurturing and sustaining services for young people who are experiencing all sorts of violence in their lives. So for me, it was like, how can I not join the board? Who wouldn't want to be a part of this incredible organization? And for as long as it is needed, and it is, and I think Anne is in a better position to talk about the extent of the need. This is where we have to be, telling these stories, doing the work, making the support available, providing young people what they need in order to have the possibility of healthy lives and healthy relationships, and then providing them the support for when they haven't, that they can move to a more healthy place.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you brought up something that I love to talk about because it the bigger light we shine on these shame cobwebs, the better, right? And so as young people, or even not as young people who experience gender-based violence, abuse in any form, sexual, physical, mental, et cetera, it comes almost package deal with this sense of shame, which is something I've read a lot about, studied a lot about. Have you seen, you've been with the organization for a while now, really through the Me Too movement, probably there before the Me Too movement, and now you're there after the Me Too movement. Have you seen there be, with these young people coming to Day One, any shift in that shame factor? Is it, I guess a better way to ask that is, are young people more willing to sort of talk about this stuff and try to find resources and help and legal services and things now that I hope some of that shame has been broken through by all of these stories being in the media and all of the coming forward? I don't know if that's a if I phrased that right, but do you know what I'm asking?
I do know what you're asking, and I will say I can't tell you in terms of any statistics. I don't have that at my hand, but I do remember very clearly hearing from our previous executive director, the founder of Day One, that in the midst of the Me Too movement, we were hearing from more young people. And I think that's because it was being talked about, and there was a recognition that this is something that happens and that isn't right and it's not okay. But to the what extent there was a really a shift or an increase, I'm afraid I can't answer that question.
Yeah, and it's there probably isn't a way to answer it. It's just in my mind, it's like wishful thinking that all of these stories coming forward maybe left the landscape a little bit more liberated.
I do hope so.
Me too. Anne, pipe in, girl.
Please. And Sarah, no, I was thinking just, I think that your attention paid to shame is so essential because shame is such a universal experience, especially shame around experiences that we've survived that we didn't cause, but we, our body or our brains or our communities might tell us that we do have some culpability in the events that we've just survived. And I do think this, I think about the conversations that the team at Day One has with young people all over New York City. And I think that there is a growing willingness to be vocal about the hard things that have happened to them. You know, I do think we know, I do, you do see cracks Breaking in the shadow of shame. You hear young people being much more willing to be in conversation about the anxiety they're experiencing, the depression that they're experiencing, the heartbreak that they're experiencing. So I do think that there things do feel to be shifting, and that there is more capacity, more willingness to be vocal about things that we have experienced that have caused us shame. And I think in doing that, that can lighten that shame, that
Yeah.
can brighten that shadow. And I think once you have that experience, it's really motivating, that once you have shared of your experience and that you find that you're still met with love and acceptance and care, and then you feel that lifting, that then you feel motivated to continue to be vocal about sharing your experiences, both for your own healing, to invite other people into conversation about survivorship. So I do. I am characteristically optimistic, but I think that my optimism is really rooted in sort of a cultural shift that's happening right now.
I love that. And just a side note, the fact that any young person who has experienced any sort of violence or sexual trauma or physical trauma, whatever it is, experiences shame as a result of that will continually break my heart for the rest of my life. I mean, it is so sad that psychologically we go to that place, but like you said, it gives me hope too that when they are met with, and I've said this so much in my work, how you are met at the point of disclosure can sort of make or break your path forward, can make or break your psyche, can make or break, your healing process, right? And so, I'm sure, and we're going to learn about, what kinds of services you're providing. But as young people come forward, in the context of day one, an organization designed to be a friend of, an advocate of, that if it's met with the way in which we know how to be trauma informed and whatever, it is leaving people better off than how they would be if they did not have that when they had the courage to speak about it, right? So let's say you're a young person and you've experienced something horrific and you come to day one. What happens? What does that journey look like? How do they sort of go through the pipeline? Do they are they supposed to know what they need from you? Are you there to help them figure that out? How does that work?
I think we have the very good fortune of being the only organization in New York City whose entirety of our budget and the sole purpose of our mission is to support survivors of gender-based violence 24 and under, and work simultaneously to prevent and ultimately end. I think that is also one of the things that is most essential about day one, is that we are boldly aspirational. We absolutely recognize that this work is essential as we strive to end gender-based violence. And we believe that. We are not overly and Pollyanna-ish sort of in our understanding of this. We absolutely understand how much tremendous labor and effort and change and time and rhetoric and cultural shifts need to have happened, but we are still inspired by this commitment to ending gender-based violence with a special emphasis on engaging with people 24 and under. So, say you are a person who has been harmed by their partner, and you are interested in just engaging in a collection of services, but you don't know what it is, you don't know what's available, but you stumble onto day one. So you are connected to us. You can get connected to us for lots of different ways. We have a helpline. We have a really vast network have referral sources. We have a really strong community presence. So you're connected to us, and then you as a young person who's being harmed by your partner, you come to us. And I think, at the outset of this conversation, I think, Sarah, what you were talking about is so essential, that the way in which someone responds when you first talk about your survivorship is so essential. And so we recognize that at that very first point of contact, we want to demonstrate to this person who has been harmed by their partner or is currently being harmed by their partner that we care about you, that we are invested in your well-being, that we believe you, and that we will be your companion throughout the next chunk of time. And we are going to offer you a collection of things, and you can engage with as much or as little of the offerings that we have. So we have a team of clinicians. So we have licensed therapists who can offer you sort of traditional therapeutic work. So you are completely invited into that. We have case managers, because we also recognize that doing the hard therapeutic work can be challenging if you don't have enough food to eat, if you don't have a stable and safe place to stay, if you are struggling with your school attendance, so that we have case managers who are going to support you in navigating all of those systems. We also recognize that you very well may have needs in the civil legal system, that you may want to pursue an order of protection in family court. You may have a child with a person who is harming you, and you may want to explore your custody, visitation, and support options. You may actually be a survivor who doesn't have U.S. immigration status, and you want to explore your immigration options. So we're going to present all of those to you. And the entire time we're presenting all of these options to you, we're doing it gently. We're doing it rooted in a place of love. I think that at day one, we're pretty explicit that this work is rooted in love. And it's not this sort of trivial, sort of overly romanticized version of love. It's this notion of love that we are all deeply and profoundly connected to one another. And that through that connection, that we are obligated to take care of one another. And
I
that feels
love
especially, oh, good.
that. And I've said many times, but most recently on CBS This Morning, I lawyer with love, right?
I
If I
love that. Oh.
am leaving you better than how I found you, I didn't do my job, right? And it's not that sort of kumbaya kind of love. It's like the sensation that I always wanted as a kid and didn't get, which is I've got you.
I
I've got
love that.
you. You're safe here. This is not a burden only on your shoulders to carry anymore. We've got this, and I'm a grown up and you're not,
Yes.
and I'm gonna take charge here, right?
Yes.
I love that. Laura, since you've been at Day One for a long time, explain to me, I am obsessed with this, but I want to know the history, if you know it, about why we're giving services for 24 and under, right? Because so many of the organizations I've encountered stop services the minute the child becomes of legal age, right? And I love that Day One is like, no, we're gonna push that out a little bit. We're gonna talk, about young adulthood, which is really when we're making some of these critical decisions about who we're gonna be in a partnership with and how this is gonna look. If you even know, how did that number 24 come up, and how did Day One decide that we need to be offering services beyond the legal age of adulthood?
So it's a really good question. And it's one I don't know the answer to. I don't know how the decision was made, but I would be shocked if it didn't have to do with just what you said, that that is young adulthood. You're still, many people, if they're going to college, if they're going on to higher education, they're still involved in it. I feel like it is that time of life where you are growing into who you are and making those kind of decisions. But I would be lying if I said I knew exactly how that number was picked, so I'm not going to say anymore.
I think it's genius, though. I mean, I really think it's genius. And I encounter in my work as an attorney representing survivors of sexual abuse, folks who are not children anymore, but who are abused and don't have the same recourse because they're over some magical, number, which to me makes no sense. But it really is those college years, or if you don't go to college, those years between 18 and 22 or 23 or 24, where you're wiring your brain relationship wise. Because when you're 12, you're a baby. You
Right.
might still experience abuse and still experience gender-based violence and still experience all those things, but you're not operating out of that sort of adult mode, although I still hesitate to call 18 to 24 adult, knowing what I know now, but I don't know. It's just, to me, there's such critically formative years that if you are experiencing this stuff, you need these resources more than anyone. So I love that Day One really sees that, and extends the ability to get resources
Yeah.
through age 24.
I can tell you that when I joined J1, we talked about serving young people between the ages of 14 and 24. And during the time, since the time I have been associated with Day One, we have moved that number down. We haven't moved above 24, but we have moved that number down lower and lower as it has become clear how important it is for young people to start understanding what healthy relationships are, what consent means, what protecting your body means. So, we've worked first, we went down to middle school and elementary school, and we don't provide the same type of service that we do for the older youth and young adults, but we have very deliberately responded to the need to provide that kind of preventive education starting at a much younger age.
I completely agree. It's a wild world out there.
Yeah.
It's
Well, and of course, social media has made everything worse. And it's everywhere.
everywhere. I had a really cool guest on a couple of weeks ago talking about safety measures that parents can take around electronic devices. He even taught me about like your Wi-Fi router in your own home. It needs to be a certain type of router, or you can gain access to all this stuff. You guys got to listen. It was a couple episodes ago, but it was just like, I'm a mom raising two little ones, and I consider myself pretty knowledgeable in this field, and he blew my mind.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a wild world out there. And a lot of my cases are originating through contact, first contact made on a TikTok, on a Snapchat, kind of
Yeah.
a thing. So this is awesome. We are going to come back next week because I need to pick your brains a little bit more. I want to hear about the how, the prevention piece, the what are we teaching, how are we educating? And we're also going to circle back to that Day One gala coming up in June 2024. We will be back next week, you guys, here on Bar Fights.
Thank you for listening to Bar Fights with attorney Sarah Klein, taking on issues that matter. Please check out our website at barfightspodcast.com, Instagram at barfightspodcast, or Twitter at barfights_pod for the latest show updates and archives.